All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, November 11th. That is
James Davis.
And I am Doug Norrie, and we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short. You can go to our site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that'll help you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And it's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set to go. It's really all you need to get started in DFS. It also includes access to our NBA projections, which are, I mean, we think, along with NFL, about as good as it gets in the entire industry. Do not think you'll be disappointed. In fact, think you'll be quite pleased. So go over free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. No better deal. All right, dude, we're going to talk about every single game in the NFL slate. How excited are you?
It should be easy. I'm pumped, man. And by the way, you've thrown me off by having me say my name first. I'm like a fish out of water right now, still recovering.
I'm actually doing that to make sure you're paying attention. I'm doing that on purpose. I have a specific thing.
I don't like to pay attention during the part where you just tell people about how sweet our free 3-day trial is. I like to take that time to collect myself and get my thoughts together.
Nah, I think I'm going to keep you on your toes. I think it's a better way for you to think and it's a more active way of thinking. The first game, we're going to break down every single game.
That's fair, man. I appreciate the tough love. Let's do this.
We're going to break down every game on the NFL slate today, talk about the DFS implications. Our last episode, which posted yesterday, broke down some of the value plays that we had. We'll make brief mentions of some of those guys, though we won't go into the detail that we did with guys like Aaron Rodgers, David Johnson, etc. If you want those plays, you can just go back to the value plays podcast from yesterday for week 10. So today we'll just spend a little bit more time talking about maybe some of those players along the margins, some things to look out for in each game and see sort of where you can maybe grab value, especially across different slates. So the first game is the Chiefs and the Panthers. A couple notes here. Alex Smith is going to come back this week and take back over for Nick Foles. It looks like Spencer Ware is going to come back and play and probably get most of the carries, I would suspect, because West was just terrible when he played in the backfield. Yeah. Though the Panthers are -3 favorites here, give me some thoughts on kind of who's standing out to you in this game at all.
I guess I feel like no one is really standing out to me as someone who I actually want in any of my lineups. Carolina is an excellent run defense. With Spencer Ware just coming back from injury, I mean, Charcandrick West has been pretty lousy, so it stands to reason that he'll resume the bulk of the work there. But he's not like super cheap or anything, and he's not one of these guys where the volume is so high that he's just a must play, particularly in a game where they're an underdog. So I don't see myself playing anyone from the Chiefs side of the ball. And then on the Carolina side, you're just basically looking at potentially big upside options that, again, I don't know that I'll include in my rotation, like Benjamin, Cam Newton, and Greg Olsen.
Yeah, Cam's been a guy we were so high on early in the season. I mean, rightfully so. He was coming off a great season, and he just had that combination of being able to run, and looked like the completion percentage was going to be sustainable enough for him that the floor would be high. But that just really hasn't happened this year. It could be a couple different reasons. The receiving core is pretty bad after Olsen, and Benjamin just hasn't done enough to really kind of separate himself, both from cornerbacks and just from the rest of the group. So it could be a problem there. He's also been running not as frequently or not as like sort of high value running, although the last couple games he has run for 7 attempts each. So it's just hard with him. Like, he's just not. If I was comparing him to like Aaron Rodgers, like he and Aaron Rodgers are basically like the same quarterback, except Rodgers throws more and runs just as much. Do you know what I mean? So that's why I just can't get excited about him.
Which is to say Rodgers is just better, right? I mean, he's lost a lot of that high upside rushing ability. I mean, he's actually turned it back on, but it's nothing like the Cam of old where you could have like a 100-yard game in play, at least from my perspective. He's not going to try and break tackles or anything like that. So I just kind of don't get it. I mean, maybe in like a great matchup you could pencil him in, but he could of course always go off. I don't know, but it's just, he's not going to be in my rotation.
What about a guy like Jonathan Stewart? They have, they have run the ball 19, 25, and 15 times last game. Is Stewart a guy, especially if he's going to be the definitive goal linebacker? That was one thing that kind of bit into his upside or even just his floor in the past, was that they just would run Cam around the goal line, but 4 touchdowns in the last 3 games. Is Stewart at all in consideration? Only 6,800 on FanDuel.
No, not really. There's some excellent high-priced options for cash games, right? Like, we talked about them yesterday, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson. I just don't know that 6,800 is where you want to be at running back this week. And particularly, like, I think if you want to be cheap at running back, it's because there's a guy whose value is so much higher than their existing price. Like, if a great punt comes to light between now and kickoff, but just like kind of a generic guy in a not so great matchup at 6,800 is just not exciting to me.
Yeah, he doesn't catch any balls on the backfield, which really limits him. So, yeah.
On DraftKings in particular, yeah. He's just not where I want to be for sure.
All right, let's move on. So the next game on the docket is the Titans. They go into Jacksonville. Jacksonville actually a favorite here. It opened at sort of a pick'em, and then it swung just a little bit in favor of Jacksonville, mostly just points coming off the Texans side of the ball. Bortles is a guy where, you know, fake Bortles, three quarters of garbage, and then fourth quarter garbage time heroics. It's just, this is another situation. Guys like Ivory, is there anyone standing out to you from either side here?
I guess. Particularly, I wrote up the Houston defense as a high upside option here. Bortles, when they get behind, he's often just chucking. He can make some big plays happen, but he can make the big plays happen for the other team as well. I do think Ivory is sort of interesting. It's a new offensive coordinator there. So if the new plan is just to give Ivory the ball 20 times a game and kind of put TJ Yeldon on the shelf, I think he could certainly return value on 5,200. And I guess if you're going to play with fire and not play one of the two excellent big money running backs this week, I think Ivory is actually kind of a reasonable direction to go. The game has a low total, but Jacksonville actually being favored is not something that will happen very frequently. So I guess if you're an Ivory buyer, there's no better time. It won't feel great, of course, if he goes out there and they just do a more traditional carry split. But yeah, I could see him being a plausible option.
Well, Ivory's interesting too, because he's kind of in that Jonathan Stewart mold. He doesn't catch any balls out of the backfield. But if he's going to see...
Where Yeldon does. Yeldon is a clear third down back.
Mm-hmm. For sure. But if they're going to see... if you can see Ivory and Stewart getting like the same amount of carries, you would take Ivory over him just because he's 1,600 less. Because there's a good chance that price hasn't totally come up to... If he's going to be sort of not an every... At least a two down back for Jacksonville. Not necessarily... He's not going to be an every down back because he doesn't... Because like you said, Yeldon would be like the change of pace guy. But,
well, Yeldon had snapped him the last 2 weeks too. Like, he got all the carries... But Yeldon had snapped him, potentially, I would assume, because he's not only good at catching balls out of the backfield, but also perhaps better pass blocker, although I haven't studied the tape on them enough to know that for sure, so I don't sound like I'm just full of crap. But I think it's a risky play, even at 5,200, but definitely one that could pay off.
What about a guy like Allen Robinson? He's had 13 catches over the last 2 weeks, 146 yards. He did catch a touchdown against KC. He's obviously a talent, though the gains haven't really been there for him at all this year, which is funny too, because they have spent a lot of the fourth quarter throwing. So like Bortles is sometimes even hitting value, just throwing near the end of the game, playing catch up. But Robinson really hasn't reaped much of the benefits there. Is this a guy that you could see sort of bouncing back kind of late in the season?
It kind of depends on what you think Allen Robinson is. So far this season, he's been like a much worse version of the T.Y. Hiltons and Amari Coopers of the world, to where, yeah, he's getting out there and getting a lot of targets, but just converting almost none of them. 39 receptions on 82 targets means you're going to get a lot of erratic performances. And the way you normally pay off when you have that kind of profile is by putting up big yards per catch. So, T.Y. Hilton at 15.2, Cooper at 14.5, but Robinson's not been doing that either. He's been having 11 yards per catch. So I don't know if he's really the high upside guy you want. That being said, $7,000 for a guy who might get 15 targets in a game is pretty affordable, and you can see scenarios where he winds up in big tournament winning lineups. But while I don't mind if he's in anyone's rotation, certainly not a cash game play for me.
Yeah, the thing that's going to be interesting to watch there is Allen Hurns is still in concussion protocol. I think if I were to guess now, he would play, but if he didn't, that probably would boost the target share for Robinson. It would also boost the target share for Marquise Lee. So that's actually something to keep an eye on heading into the week. As of right now, Friday morning, Hurns has not been cleared, right?
And so, I actually see Marquise Lee as being considerably a bigger beneficiary there, because Robinson kind of gets all the targets he can get already. It'd be hard for him to go from 12 or 15 targets up to like 18. We've seen it happen, but given the low conversion rate for him, Jacksonville's cruising if they try that, in my opinion.
Yeah, and on the Houston side of the ball, I mean, Osweiler sucks. I don't really know another way to. I don't really know another way to put it. This is a real shame.
No analysis. He just gets the Osweiler sucks.
I mean, he sucks. They don't throw. They really don't throw that much to begin with. He's not a very good thrower when they do. I mean, he actually. The real indictment on him is, it stands to reason you would think they actually have receivers. I mean, Hopkins and Fuller. I mean, to some degree, Fedoris is pretty good too. They actually have guys that can catch the ball. His throw, I mean, he has some games that are just truly terrible. And I know he's run into some bad defenses for sure. But like in Minnesota, or sorry, like
bad matchups.
Apologies. Yeah, bad matchups. Like Minnesota was a bad matchup. Denver is not great. There's some games in here that you don't like to see. But I mean, he has games of like 186 yards passing, 131, 184. I mean, he has four of his last six games are under 200 yards passing, and there's games in there that have over 40 attempts. So I don't know. He's not even an upside play for me at this point. And neither
seems real bad. Yeah.
And they've kind of gone away from Miller a little bit in the run game as they realize that you just can't run a guy to death or else he will get hurt. This whole team's just
They just lose and lose anyway, right? So it's not like they're really accomplishing anything. I guess I will say CJ Fedoritz, you mentioned him. He's still a pretty big red zone target there, and he's locked into roughly 15% target share or so. So at 5,200, I mean, there's a lot of competition at tight end at that price range, and he's a little bit more expensive than when we played him in cash after his famous. Now, 12.8 point performance against Detroit.
So famous. But,
yeah, I mean, that was pretty famous, I would say.
Well, it's famous because midway through the first quarter, he got hit so hard that I actually thought he was dead. It looked not good. But he's been actually amazingly consistent. 4, 4, 6, 5, 5 are the catches in the last five games. That's
right,
for a tight end.
Exciting there, but. No. Given that he's a red zone guy, 3 touchdowns in the last 6, or 5 rather. A reasonable option. Couldn't kill anyone if they wanted to play him. But, I think there are better options in the same price range, so I won't be.
All right, Denver goes into New Orleans to play the Saints. Saints are a team that we've targeted in the past, though they've had the gift of just playing some pretty bad defenses over the short term. Denver is not one of those defenses. This is about not the lowest total you'll see for a team like the Saints, but it's pretty low. Under 26 implied points for them is it means they're playing a good team. Is that too much? Is the Denver defense, which right now ranks second overall in DVOA on the season, and they're especially great against the pass, second overall against the pass. Does that mean just kind of like a stay away situation for the Saints?
Well, I mean, the Saints are a team where if you guess right in any given week, you can put together a winning big tournament lineup. So I don't know that you want to write them off completely, particularly for big tournaments. But just like, I've said for some other teams already, if you're building cash games, the price points where you're going to have to get these guys are very competitive and probably not where you want to be. So like, you don't want to try and guess right on Hightower or Ingram in a bad matchup. Maybe like Michael Thomas, he's still very cheap for that target share and what he can do, but it's about as bad a matchup as you can ask for. And teams are starting to wake up to the fact that he's just not a wide receiver three that you can sort of ignore while you cover Snead and Cooks. So I don't really love any of the options here. Again, if you wanted to do like some kind of single stack with like Breeze and Michael Thomas, figuring that you'll get a lot of separation in a game with a not so high total and just a bad matchup defensively, then I could see it. But I don't know that I'll be going there.
This year, Denver against wide receiver ones ranks first in DVOA. Against wide receiver twos, they rank first in DVOA. And against all other wide receivers, they rank second. So I guess all the other cornerbacks are just getting crap from the other.
So key in on Michael Thomas.
Yeah, you only get a 46% downgrade when you play the other wide receivers as opposed to the
52%. Yeah, it makes sense too. Like Denver plays defense well, and they also play slowly. I mean, they're not really incentivized to get out there and try and chew it up in the air, right? With Trevor Siemian at the helm, I guess it's kind of. What's your take on the Denver running back situation this week?
Yeah, there's news. I mean, it's funny. This is why you can never trust a team, and this is actually when you can't trust a team, you probably should just avoid it. But it looked like Booker was going to take a majority of the carries. He hasn't been very good. So then there's like, oh, we're going to take Capri Bibbs, and he's going to be the guy. Although some people will look to be like, oh, he had a lot of yards last game. It was on one catch for 70 yards. Like, he didn't really actually do anything. He touched the ball 3 total times on just one target. He just happened to break one of those for a 70-yard touchdown. I mean, I could see, honestly, if I was, I could see playing Booker in a tournament here, if you think they're able to run the ball a decent amount against the Saints, who really aren't very good on defense, especially against the run, like they rank 25th in DVOA, I'm not totally believing that like Bibbs is all of a sudden going to out-touch Booker after the last 3 weeks. So I could actually see playing Booker in a tournament just because of the Saints defense and that Denver might want to run the ball. I could actually play some of the wide receivers too, just because the Saints just aren't a good defense. And this is where you want to target guys.
Exactly.
This is where we targeted Flacco last night against the Browns, somewhat under-owned, even though it was a Thursday game. He was great. And not to pat ourselves on the back for that. But the thing is, when you have quarterbacks that have, or teams that have like maybe played some tougher defenses, and then all of a sudden they get the bad defense, the price has dropped and you can grab them. Now the problem here is that it's like a lot of uncertainty, and like the Denver quarterback situation isn't great, so that's why it's like not exactly a perfect comp for Flacco, but I could definitely see playing some of these guys in tournaments.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, next game is the Vikings and the Redskins. DeSean Jackson was ruled out of this game. He actually got ruled out last night just before the Thursday lock. So where do you think, Jackson gets ruled out, what does that do to the targets in Washington? I mean, he wasn't a huge target guy, but that's something. Like, that needs to get redistributed somewhere, and they do have some interesting guys. What are some thoughts here on the Redskins side? Oh, and also, with the other note, is that Rob Kelly looks like he's going to get a majority of the carries out of the backfield.
Yeah, so we talked about Jordan Reed a little bit yesterday. I don't know that he and Jackson are really overlapping a ton in terms of what they're doing for the Washington offense, but just to your point, more targets to go around can never hurt the other guys that are out there. The other interesting guys on Washington from a pass perspective, again, this would be a lot more interesting, I think, if the matchup were better,
yeah.
But Jameson Crowder at just 6,000 has actually been getting a really significant target share the last few weeks. 16 against Detroit, 20 against Cincinnati, putting up 100-yard games in both of those. And, that we've seen him be used as a red zone target as well. So, again, he doesn't really run. I mean, Jackson kind of just does his own thing in Washington.
Right.
They have like three possession guys and then DeSean Jackson. But, I could see Crowder being a very plausible play, even in a tough matchup, given the extra targets to go around.
Yeah, they do lose the downfield threat because you're right. A lot of these other guys are kind of underneath out route kind of dudes.
Yeah.
And it's not like they swap into what Jackson was already doing. It's more that they just lose that downfield threat. Yeah, the problem too is that the matchup against Minnesota is bad. So Minnesota is an excellent defense, all things considered. So it would be much, much more interesting if they were just playing even like a middle of the road defense here to have some of those targets redistributed. But it's going to be really tough to go against a team. I mean, Minnesota fourth against the pass, ninth against the rush, top five overall defense. You just really don't want to play guys in those situations, even if you think you're going to get outsized volume because someone else has been lost. It doesn't boost the guys enough for me to put them in, like, even definitely not in the realm of safe. And I'm just not even sure how much upside they have, though. I will say Kelly, it was clear they're willing to lean on Rob Kelly at least, 21 carries last week. So, although he doesn't do much out of the backfield in terms of the passing game. So, sort of interesting, but again, the defense kind of just wipes it off the table for me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, right. And Rob Kelly, I think, would be a guy we'd be very excited about potentially if, the matchup were better here. And he might still wind up being a reasonable play. It's not really hard to return value on a $5,300 salary, like if Washington is going to score at all. But, that's not a sure thing here. So I would love if some of these value guys just had better matchups, but they just don't.
On the other side, we did discuss Stephon Diggs yesterday, so we don't need to go back into him. We just still see him as a value play. After him, though, I mean, Minnesota looked like they were wanting to pass a little bit more with Bradford last week with the OC change. But anyone else here at all interesting to you? McKinnon, Asiata, anybody here? Bradford.
No, not really. I think it's worth not glossing over Diggs in case people missed the podcast yesterday. More than a value play, one of the guys that will probably be in all of our FanDuel lineups. So we'd like Diggs quite a lot in a very reasonable matchup here.
Green Bay goes into Tennessee. They have one of the higher implied totals of the week at 26. Rodgers is a guy we've spent a lot of time over the last 3 weeks talking about. We did it again yesterday as a value play. He's our cash game quarterback for sure on the Sunday main slate. Definitely, he'll be a chalkier play just because he's been so good over the last couple weeks and gets another great matchup against the Titans, who really struggled.
And the price hasn't moved. Man, it's great.
Right, exactly. Right. We even said yesterday the price actually went down on FanDuel, crazily enough. But after him, who, again, starting this by saying he is the definitive cash game quarterback for us. After him, though, how do we make heads or tails of the Green Bay receiving core? If Ty Montgomery has been running out of the backfield, though they said he was on limited snaps last week, unclear if that limited snaps piece is off of him or not. Again, that would have been great news to know, before the game, But when we were just playing him. But you know, is he a guy that we can trust on in PPR or even non PPR scoring? Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, Cobb might play this week. I mean, how do we make sense of the Green Bay receivers here?
Well, you know, Devontae Adams had been kind of a favored son of many in the DFS community after just accruing ridiculous target share over the course of a few weeks, 25 total receptions across two games against Chicago and Atlanta. But he tailed off quite a bit in their last game, and Jordy Nelson sort of rose back into prominence. It'd be easy for people to forget, I think, that Nelson, kind of in his heyday, was an easy $9,000 receiver, you know, getting targets on the order of guys like Antonio Brown or Julio Jones. And while he's not quite up in that stratosphere just yet, he is playing all the snaps, and he's the very definitive red zone target for them. You know, touchdowns in back-to-back games. In fact, only two games without a touchdown so far this season. And one of those games was when he just kind of no-showed against Chicago with just one reception there. So I do think Nelson is an excellent target for really any format. The question is going to be, can you fit him in given some high-priced options you might want to spend up for elsewhere? But I really can't fault you if you do. After that, though, like Ty Montgomery, you know, sort of this running back slash wide receiver role, he can just disappear too easily for me, I think. Kind of attractive, I guess, on DraftKings where the receptions are a little bit more impactful for you. But given that Rodgers seems to have, you know, rekindled his affinity for Nelson, I just don't see him as being a lock even at that price.
Yeah, the only thing that worries, or the thing that worries me about Nelson is that Cobb did play limited snaps last week but is expected to get his full share back again this week. And I'm just not sure how much that affected Jordy's targets last week. So I just get worried about the I'm just mostly have question marks about the receiver core in general. I think they all have significant upside, but the problem is there's just so many of them is the problem. It's like an embarrassment of riches, really, for when it comes to like the Packers passing game. So that's really the thing that concerns me the most.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, Nelson earlier in the season, he was still getting like 16-18% target share even when Cobb was out there. It was just that the conversion rate wasn't there where it had been historically, and I do believe that will regress sort of back to the mean. I'm caveating all this by saying we're probably not going to play him in cash games just because we believe that there are better big money options elsewhere. But I just think he's still there's a great case to be made that Nelson is still at his cheapest price that he'll be for the rest of the season. And if you want to be a Jordy Nelson buyer, now's probably the time.
You know, if you think that Tennessee is going to be playing catch up here, I mean, they're underdogs. They're not crazy underdogs here, but they're playing at home. I'm not enamored with a guy like DeMarco Murray. Green Bay has been pretty good against the run, all things considered.
Yeah, they've
this
been
season.
Excellent against
the run. Yeah. But Mariota is interesting. If you think they're playing from behind or you think they need to pass a little bit more, Mariota's been really good from a fantasy perspective over the last five or so weeks. Now, a lot of it is because he's just throwing a ton of touchdowns. He's got, 13 touchdowns over the last 5 weeks. I mean, that seems unsustainable to me, but if they're just throwing the ball, if the offense is starting to get a little bit more in a groove and they're able to get sort of down and close and they're throwing down there, I don't know. Do you see him as like an upside play against the Packers?
Yeah, I think I absolutely do. You know, it's really funny. We always caution people against getting an emotional attachment or aversion to various players.
Right.
And we loved Mariota. We wrote these breathless, gushing reviews of him going into that Oakland game in week 3. And then he just went out there and had 6 fantasy points, like 50% completion, a couple picks. And I think we never came out publicly and like disavowed ourselves of Mariota, but I think quietly we remained very skeptical just based on just that one. And then I think we played him a little bit against Houston too. Those two like really, really bad games. But yeah, I mean, since then he's kind of rounded into where we pictured his trajectory would head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the projection system saw it too, which is this guy who actually can get around 70% completion, who's going to sprinkle in some rushing yards and even a rushing touchdown or two here and there. And that's just a guy who's worth probably more than his current price is. You know, I think we'll be bigger buyers next time he has like a really good matchup. It's probably worth noting that he has had a streak of excellent matchups with Miami, Cleveland, Indy, Jacksonville, and San Diego. So, you know, that gravy train won't keep rolling on forever, but still cheap. And he's a guy you can kind of take alone or pair with a high upside play like Kendall Wright. And you can really do some damage in big tournaments. So, yeah, I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, you can even kind of do a quarterback tight end pairing with him and Delanie Walker. Walker has seen a fair amount of targets over the last, over the whole season. But in the last week, you know, 9 targets, 5 targets, 8 targets. That's excellent for a tight end. 2 touchdowns in the last 3 games. So they're actually looking at him in the red zone. So
yeah, he's a big time red zone target. I guess with Delanie Walker, 6,200 for a tight end. Well, yeah, those targets are solid. Like Lance, I mean, if we're talking big tournaments, yeah, sure.
That's all I'm talking about. Yeah.
That's fine. I have no no disagreement then.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go cash. There are other guys. Like we mentioned Jordan Reed before, and that Reed to me is like the clear play, especially with Jackson out as well. So like, no, I would not go Walker over Reed in any scenario, and I probably would go cheaper if I wasn't going Reed. But yeah, I just like him from the sense of he does have touchdown upside for a tight end more than many other tight ends, like even in the same price range.
Sure. I think if you're just going there and you're going all in on this Tennessee thing, I guess I just do like Kendall Wright. I think he'll be a little bit less chalky among the Tennessee stackers. And the upside there is through the roof. I mean, a lot of people forget that Kendall Wright, when he was, you know, in his prime, I guess, so to speak, before injury, was a guy who was like among the league leaders in target share. So he hasn't really put that together all yet this season, but he did have that one enormous game against Cleveland. And just in the sneaky, like, again, if you're doing it, you're trying to get away with something here, getting him for 4,800 when he has maybe not wide receiver one, but wide receiver two upside, I think is a very solid direction to go.
Chicago heads into Tampa Bay. This game is basically a pick 'em. Mike Evans cleared concussion protocol. He's going to play. It looks like Doug Martin's going to be back this week. And the Bears have Cutler starting. Jordan Howard's going to get the carries. There's some interesting stuff here. Give me some of their thoughts on this game.
Yeah, well, news came out, of course, that Jordan Howard has a stranglehold, Doug, on the number one running back job in Chicago. And, you know, pretty impressive performance for him against Minnesota last week. Still very affordably priced, I think, thanks to the return of Jeremy Langford and the fact that he had just 7 carries against Green Bay. But it's really tough to know what to make of the situation here. You know, a guy who can get 26 carries in a very bad matchup against Minnesota and be awesome, and this very same guy who can get 7 carries against Green Bay and be terrible. So I don't know that he feels super safe, but definitely a guy that seems like a worthwhile consideration, frankly, in all formats.
Yeah, it's funny. If you knew he was going to get, like, if you knew that kind of amount of carries was like a real thing, he probably would be a cash game play just about. But the problem, because he'll catch a decent amount of balls on the backfield as well. So He's from a fantasy perspective, I really like him. It's just that I can't trust the Bears at all. That's most of the problem. Like, they just have jacked around the carries here. So he could very easily be, I could see him being like the top, maybe one of the top overall running backs this week, possibly, but I could also see him getting 9 carries and just being out of the game. So like, that's mostly the problem that I don't trust.
The bigger issue for me, actually, is just that you can only play 2 running backs, and I love Bell and Johnson so much that it's hard for me to imagine paying down for a guy. Like, I'm punting down to a guy with a lower points per dollar projection in our system, and I just don't see that being where I choose to save up. Like, if I could play Howard at wide receiver, or, you know, maybe even a flex role on DraftKings or something, I could see that happening. But nah, I'm not going to do it on FanDuel.
Yeah, what's interesting this week actually is, and we say this is a good idea most weeks, but is to play all the different slates. So if you play the 1 p.m. only slate, you actually don't get those two big time running backs in Bell and Johnson, who both play at 4 o'clock. So this is the case for me, again, to split your buy-ins up a little bit more and be slate dependent. Because if you play the 1 p.m. slate, then Jordan Howard basically is the cash game running back, along with maybe like a guy like Rob Kelly, who you're getting, you know, some savings on even in a bad matchup. But if he's going to get the carries, and then you don't have much of a problem fitting then, you know, guys like Aaron Rodgers and some like the Green Bay wide receiver. So my point being, this is where it's nice to, because those big time running backs fall on the late slate, but Rodgers falls on the early one. It's just another incentive to just kind of split my buy-ins a little bit between 1 p.m. only, 4 p.m. only, main slate, and so on and so forth, because you just get value kind of across, and you get your money in good kind of everywhere, I think, this week.
I think that's a terrific recommendation. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people look at football as like one contest, a main slate thing, but you only get 20 contests, or 20 weeks, rather, every football season to play DFS, and if you're just going to roll the dice, like, pretty much anything can happen over 20 slates, right? But if you can effectively triple or even quadruple the number of slate exposure you get to football, then you're in much better shape. I mean, a classic example, frankly, is our system this year, right? So we're in the top 10 of the DFAC this year, so the Daily Fantasy Accuracy Cup. And we've had some like insane injury luck, and like there's just been some really weird things that have happened. But, you know, users will still come in and be like, hey, I didn't do so well in football last week. And it's like, well, we're in the top 10 of all the experts that are in this thing. So like, if we're not doing well for you, then who is, kind of? But in the same token, like, if you only play the main slate, then you're just asking to introduce more variance into your life. So I love that recommendation, particularly in weeks where it's just so clear cut that there's value across many slates.
And the great thing about being able to run optimization models is that you, especially those, you know, we've always said this a lot with basketball. but it holds true for football as well, is that the smaller the slate you get, the more mistakes your competitors can make, where optimal pieces, the optimal lineups will not make those mistakes. The mistakes don't cascade down. Like, you know, you won't pay up in the wrong place, theoretically, over the long term, obviously. And you're just getting your money in as good as possible each time. And we've had an enormous amount of success on these smaller slates just for that reason, right? So I love it from a hedging perspective. I love it from a value perspective. I love that, I just love being able to cheer for more guys. Like, I'd rather root for more guys than root against more guys. That's just a fan thing. So I don't know. Just that's our recommendation, is this week especially looks great to just kind of spread some money between those different slates. On the Tampa Bay side of the ball, Doug Martin looks like he's going to come back this week and I guess resume most of the carries. I'm not totally positive there. Mike Evans, like I said, Mike Evans clear concussion protocol. Jameis is sort of interesting against Chicago. Chicago is slight favorites. What do you think here?
Yeah, I think Mike Evans is a guy we continue to go back to the well on. He's still the NFL targets leader by a healthy margin now. He's up to 103 targets, where Terrell Pryor Sr. second at 91 targets. But yeah, Evans, what's that?
Well, he's got an extra game, but that's still insane.
Yeah, it's really bananas. But yeah, Evans is, you know, just a huge, huge volume guy. The Bears are not a fantastic passing defense. So certainly a guy you can continue to consider. Like we talked about, not wanting to spend down for Howard because we like the payoffs at running back. I think we might run into a similar situation here with Evans, where while he's pretty much a value from week to week, just because the sites tend to not price guys high enough when they're getting that kind of outsized target share. I think you can get slightly better value just by spending up at different positions, even if Evans did go off for 35 fantasy points or whatever last week.
I do want to make mention, I skipped him, but Jay Cutler is actually a really good value on DraftKings. He's only 5,300, and the Bears will throw enough. I mean, he's Jay Cutler. He's not in the old not easy to root for category. He isn't, but 5,300 for him against a Tampa Bay defense that is below average, that's not a bad – I don't think that's a bad place to just save a little bit, especially if you want to go double expensive running back and grab an expensive wide receiver. So Cutler, not a cash game guy for me necessarily, but I do think there's some value with him there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think – on the Bucs side of the ball, you mentioned Winston as well. Winston, I mean, certainly not a cash game play. I suppose you can make an argument for him in big tournaments. Like if there's a week where he and Evans just hook up and, you know, put up three touchdowns together or something like we saw earlier in the season in the LA game in Atlanta, then maybe he could be a consideration and you know, a worthwhile consideration if you run a pretty deep rotation for tournaments, but not a guy I'm personally high on this week.
The next game is the Falcons headed to Philly to play the Eagles. This is interesting because this game opened with Philly minus 2.5 and swung pretty quickly to Falcons minus 2. And I've been trying to figure out why exactly that would happen. I don't know. I mean, doesn't seem like there's any great change to either team necessarily, except that, you know, people maybe just are overvaluing the Eagles from early season success, and Vegas just swung it back the other way, or maybe they felt like the defense isn't as good. I mean, that doesn't make sense why points would come off the table for the Eagles necessarily. So I'm a little confused by this line switch. I don't know if you have any insight into it.
Well, I think people are looking at the Falcons and maybe assuming that they've just got it all figured out now. Julio's healthy. Maybe Vegas figured that people would overvalue the Eagles' early season performance. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on. I'm not aware of any big news or anything that should move a line this dramatically. So it's sort of anyone's guess at this point.
It's a little weird to me because, and I wonder, I'm going to do some more research into this after this, but you know, Philly's the number one ranked DVOA defense in the league right now. So it's a little odd to have a team on the road in the Falcons have like the second highest projected point total of the week, second or third highest. So the whole thing strikes me as a little bit fishy. I don't think I'm going to be playing anyone on the Falcons side of the ball just because I don't like the defensive matchup. This is, you know, Vegas independent. Eagles.
No, real quick, did the Eagles, are you looking at, is that DVOA weighted for strength of schedule or is that just like straight up DVOA?
It's both. It's weighted and non-adjusted. So
yeah, that's interesting because looking at their schedule, and you know, this is where the old eyeball test normally fails. So I certainly trust Football Outsiders. By the way, DVOA is a Football Outsiders stat that, you know, just tries to analyze what happens sort of on a per play basis rather than, you know, looking at the aggregate like total yards per game or whatever. But looking at their schedule, like the eyeball test version, so they have Cleveland, they have Chicago, Pittsburgh, and they just destroyed Pittsburgh, which I think probably really moves the needle. Pittsburgh is an electric offense and was lost in that game. Mm-hmm. But then Detroit, Washington, Minnesota, Dallas, Giants. So like that doesn't strike me as a super tough schedule in terms of opposing offenses. Pittsburgh being the best offense there and the fact that they silenced them, you know, worth something, but probably not what we should assume they'll do for the rest of the season. So I'm just not sure. They don't feel like the best defense to me, I guess. And that's kind of a BS piece of analysis because my feelings shouldn't matter that much. But I guess all of this to say, I don't think it's unreasonable that such a great offense like the Falcons would have a high total here.
Yeah, it just feels a little high to me. But I think this game is mostly just going to be a void for me. I don't really trust the Eagles side. And again, our system is going to really have a hard time recommending Falcons guys against such a defense that's, you know, whichever way you want to rank it, they're still a well above average defense, you would say. Probably a very, very good one, even if you think that the schedule thing is throwing things a little bit off. So this game for me is mostly just a stay away kind of all around. The next game in the old category is the Rams and the Jets. I mean, could there be... If any game just sums up why you just would totally skip watching a game, this would be probably it for me. It's almost,
what kind of masochist would turn this game on purpose? Like, no one, right?
The game opened with a 41 over-under and then just dropped because Vegas is like, no. Let's not get too crazy about how many points they're going to score. This might be under, it might score combined under 40 this week. It's pushing that way. The line's just been continuing to get pushed down. I mean,
the lowest line by 4 points.
Yeah, right? Forte doesn't see the carries enough last week. I mean, we talked a little bit about Kendricks on the tight end side of the thing. He actually is a little bit interesting because he's so cheap on both sides, and he has seen targets. After Kendricks, though, I mean, when the $3,000 tight end is the most exciting thing to get to get yourself going here. I mean, is there anything else here? Brandon Marshall at all? I don't know. What do you think?
Kendricks is a pretty significant headliner, I think. I mean, the target share has been really climbing. Don't laugh. I'm serious. Because, you know, normally we like to get our super cheap guys when there's kind of like an urgent change in opportunity, and that's not the case with Kendricks, but he falls more in the class of guy who's generally ignored and has kind of been chugging along doing his thing. You know, the Rams just don't score enough to really support a fantasy offense at all, but Kendricks is a potential goal line back, or a goal line target, assuming they might get down there. He's a reasonable pass blocker, so I actually do like Kendricks quite a bit, particularly as a way just to unlock the very expensive guys. And also because there just aren't a lot of other good cheap tight ends this week. Mm-hmm. And I just don't – like when I look at all the list of guys and kind of break down strategically where I want to be spending up, tight end doesn't feel like the spot to do it. So I actually do like Kendricks. He'll be in all my cash game lineups as of this podcast. After that, though, this game falls off super, super dramatically. I mean, we saw Kenny Britt, you know, pop up on our DraftKings optimal lineup last week and sort of be reasonable against Carolina. But I don't think you want to go back to that well in a very tough matchup here. Brandon Marshall is a guy we liked kind of early in the season, but his receptions to targets ratio has also fallen off a cliff. It's actually even worse than Allen Robinson. He's got 39 receptions on 85 targets. So again, not a guy we'll be playing. This is not a lot to be excited about here.
Yeah, no, this is mostly, outside of Kendricks, this is mostly just a total skip for me. Moving into the next game, we have the Dolphins go in and play the Chargers. We mentioned Tyrell Williams is an interesting play that's seen fairly steady targets over the last few weeks. And, you know, there's some interesting guys on the Chargers side of the ball. Jay Ajayi is a guy who's gotten a ton of carries, and we talked in significant detail about him on the pod. We do consider him to be sort of in that cash game realm, though we like him a little bit under than some of the bigger running backs we've seen. Any other thoughts on this game? There was a note that the Dolphins are more incentivized to get Jarvis Landry into the role, just kind of mixed into the offense as his target share has not really been, I don't think, where we expected. Give me some of your thoughts here.
Sure. So there's actually a lot of fantasy relevance here. I think some people will be on Melvin Gordon, who's been putting up some very significant fantasy totals. I mean, of course, the 196 yards, a touchdown, and then 65 receiving yards last week. So now he's got 233 fantasy point performances in his last three games. And the game he took off was against Denver, and he had 18 points there. So Melvin Gordon's a guy I think you'll see. Just people are going to play him. He'll be on people's radars against a Miami team that just can't really get a lot going, especially with San Diego favored. And Jay Ajayi is kind of the same way, another huge, huge volume guy with a good matchup. The real crisis of conscience that people are going to have here this week is the fact that you're limited at your running back slots and you're limited when you want to spend up. So, you know, David Johnson's a guy, fantastic matchup, huge volume. He's going to wind up in our system, but I wouldn't fault anyone. Like among these four running backs, Gordon, Ajayi, Bell and Johnson, I wouldn't fault anyone for kind of mixing and matching wherever they would like. You know, I personally trust Bell on the track record there, but this is a big decision for people to which of those three guys in a very tight price range that they're going to wind up choosing.
Yeah, Gordon does have that elite level of volume over the specifically over the last 4 weeks, but kind of mostly for the whole season, right?
And yeah, since Woodhead went down. Yeah.
Right, and the price has climbed for sure, and it is, you're right, this is going to be the decision most people are going to have is a guy like Gordon, because Miami is below average against the rush. They are, his charges are favored, and the guy just gets all of the touches. He gets all the carries, and he gets out of the backfield too. Passes out of the backfield too. So a really high floor on him. I'm totally with you. The running back is a little bit difficult this week.
Yep, and after that, so you have Tyrell Williams we talked about in this game. You know, worth noting, he did miss practice early this week. He returned to practice on Thursday, and people assume that he's fine, but if you are risk averse when it comes to injury, and for good reason, I don't mind, you know, you should definitely keep an eye on the situation one way or the other, but you should be aware that if you play Tyrell Williams, even at punt prices, that you're introducing a little bit more injury risk than perhaps you will with a guy with no question marks at all. Jarvis Landry is a guy I'm not interested in at all at this point. He was getting a ton of targets early in the season, and that's really consistently declined. That number has gone down. Well, his overall target share has gone down in each of the last 3 weeks. Miami, as they continue to rely on Jay Ajayi for their short yardage things, that actually does cut into Landry pretty directly, because the Dolphins have always been a team that's tried to, well, not always, in the last couple of years, they've tried to, you know, substitute in sort of the short pass, and Landry is the guy who gets a lot of those short passes, so I don't like him very much, and I think that he'll continue to fall out of favor as the season progresses.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And one more, just to circle right back around to Melvin Gordon for a second. If you're in that camp of like, well, I do want to play Gordon, and I want to get him at a better price point, I would suggest maybe playing him on DraftKings, where he's 600 less than a guy like Bell, whereas on FanDuel, he's 200 more. So 200 more than Bell on FanDuel, but 600 less on DraftKings, where it gets a little bit closer. So if you're looking to maybe get him in at the right price point, I'd be more inclined to play Gordon over on DraftKings than on FanDuel, where I would probably just take Bell for the cheaper rate.
Yeah, I like that. So the other guy you talked about, well, I don't think you mentioned, but is showing up sometimes in our DraftKings lineups, is Antonio Gates. Gates listed as questionable for this week, but it should be out there. He's a guy that is now on a full set of snaps. So, you know, he's been up to the full 66 snaps last week, caught another touchdown, is looking like he's rounding into, you know, a guy that we can sort of rely on for fantasy purposes. You know, a little bit more expensive than some of your other options, and he's going to cause some pricing problems for you if you decide to play him on FanDuel, but definitely a worthwhile option, and especially if you want to, you know, potentially stack him with Rivers or something for a big tournament.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting DFS implication games on the week for sure. You'll see a lot of ownership coming out of this one, and I think if anything, we could see this thing trend over the over-under, I suspect, over 48, just because there's just a decent amount of offense. The next game, also a bunch of fantasy implications, only really for one side of the ball, is the 49ers and the Cardinals. Cardinals are huge favorites, one of the highest lines I've seen all year, maybe the highest one, -13.5 going in, that you really do not see, you don't really see spreads like this too often, especially in the current NFL where things just tend to trend toward the middle. This one's a real outlier in terms of just overall favorites. Right now, the Cardinals are projected for implied total of around 31 with the 49ers about 17. That's just, could be a bloodbath. We talked a ton about David Johnson. David Johnson is the guy we'll be playing in every single lineup. He's the cash game running back for sure this week for us, and I suspect for a lot of the industry. There's just too many things. I mean, San Francisco has been gouged by the run. David Johnson's been awesome. We talked about it. So he's the cash game guy for us for sure. After him, though, you know, some other guys that are starting to show up here too, and it's mostly because San Francisco's so bad on defense, is the Cardinals passing attack. How much do you worry about guys like Larry Fitzgerald? J.J. Nelson was a guy that sort of creeped into fantasy consciousness the other day. Carson Palmer, maybe. How much do you worry about the passing game in a game like this where it's projected to be a bloodbath?
Well, I don't worry about it too much, especially because Fitzgerald and Nelson, they're not very expensive, so you don't really need a ton of production out of them in order for them to pay their price. And unless you think David Johnson is just going to get all of the touches and all of the scoring, then there should be some points to go around here. So I wouldn't worry too much about deploying either of those guys if that's, you know, how the prices shake out for you. But you know, you're always introducing some level of risk when you're taking a passing game in a game with a huge spread like this.
On the 49ers side, I mean, anything here, Kaepernick, I mean, the Arizona's a decent defense. They're supposed to get slaughtered. Is there any case to throw out any guys from the 49ers here?
Well, some people will talk themselves into Dewan Harris after last week. You know, he's kind of been labeled as the definitive back right now. He did have 15 touches, including the big receiving TD. So I could see people going in that direction. I won't be.
And I think people will play the Cardinals defense, even though they are a little bit expensive. But sure, that projected total is so very low for that team. So, I mean, again, Cardinals are pretty expensive. They're the most expensive defense, I think, on FanDuel. So it's a little tough to pay all the way up for a defense, though this might be one of the times that you might want to do it just because the matchup is so great. All right, the next game is the Cowboys go and play the Steelers. Steelers are favorites here, which suggests to me that Vegas is getting more and more comfortable with the idea that Roethlisberger is getting healthier, I think. Now, they were a little bit confident with that last week, and it didn't totally work out, but Steelers are favorites here over the Cowboys. We talked a lot about Le'Veon Bell and liking what we saw maybe with him, his price getting depressed, and we also discussed with him was that while the Cowboys were ranked pretty high in against the rush, they were a team that actually had not really played anybody so far. No. They just really have not played a running back going at all. So I'm not so worried about the ballyhooed Cowboy defense in that case because I just haven't seen a talent yet, and I just like the price we're getting after him. And I think we talked about Antonio Brown as well. Is there anyone else on the Steelers side? And then on the Dallas side, I mean, are guys like Elliott in play here at all against the Steelers team with coming in as underdogs?
Well, so I think to start, it's worth revisiting this idea about Bell because we talked about this quite a bit on the podcast yesterday, but at 8,100, I mean, he's a guy whose fair price when, you know, things are clicking for him is more around 9,000. And while he hasn't had that breakout, like truly electric performance just yet, he's also had some fairly tough matchups and, you know, some other extenuating circumstances that have been pretty negative. So I think this is a rare situation where you can actually get some separation by playing
yep.
Bell. Even against, you know, and you get to play him at 8,100. So that's kind of a crazy thing for me that really makes me feel like I want to enter more big tournaments this week. So just throwing that out there for starters, that it's going to be hard to play Bell knowing that other people are going to be playing, you know, the Melvin Gordons and Jay Ajayis of the world. But I'm pretty convicted on that one. I think that's an excellent play. I think people have such a hard time evaluating sample size when it comes to football. Because, you know, the way the human brain wants to work in situations like this is they'll say things like, well, we're halfway through the season, right? Mm-hmm. But halfway through the season doesn't qualify anything.
Right.
If you play a two-game, like what if it was a strike-shortened season and there was only four games? Would you say that after two games? Well, no, of course not. It's very easy to run bad or good in terms of strength of schedule. And the Dallas running back situation particularly has been such an outlier in terms of the teams they played. You read off the list yesterday, but it's probably worth repeating just briefly here. So they played Cleveland, Philly, Green Bay, Cincy, San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, the Giants. Like you just can't get a better schedule than that for a rush defense. So I think they're in for a rude awakening here. I think actually a lot of people are going to bet the other side of this game. I think they're going to bet the Dallas side and be like, what is this Vegas thinking? How could the Steelers be favored here? This is insane. And I think that actually it's a trap. I think that the Steelers offense does excellently here and that both Brown and Bell wind up paying their prices. Though again, with Brown, I talked about this yesterday. I suspect that you'll wind up getting a better value by paying up at running back and quarterback rather than putting him in there as well.
Yeah, we might. It's crazy to think that we might be in stick your neck out territory here with Le'Veon Bell because I just think that we're going to be because I just don't think, like for those guys you mentioned, I don't think people are going to play him. And I'm totally in lockstep with you on that, that this seems like it's a cash game play, but also tournament because the separation is going to be built in by the industry, right? Like and recent performances by some of those other guys. So I really couldn't agree more. What about the Dallas side?
Yeah, so I think I'm a little bit less on Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, I wouldn't play Ezekiel Elliott this week anyway, just because, again, there's so much better value elsewhere. But worth noting that Alfred Morris did peek his little head up a little bit last week. He had 17 carries. And again, it was a huge blowout. So that was probably just Dallas being like, you know, the old high school basketball game where like, your buddy from your chemistry class, the 13th man on the team, gets in there to shoot a few threes when they're up by 25 points.
Right.
Shout out to Matt Mittelstadt if you're listening out there, buddy. Miss you. We haven't talked in a while, but I think that's more the case last week. You know, we're not entering into any sort of run share here, but it's just going to be hard for Elliott to really provide outsized value as an underdog in the 9,000 price range when you've got guys like David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon and the rest of those guys scattered around in the same price range.
Seahawks go into New England to play the Patriots. Patriots, pretty big favorites here, 7.5 going in. We did discuss Tom Brady yesterday as a possible, probably not a cash game quarterback, just mostly because we liked Rodgers, but that a guy, most of our theme on Brady was that people will avoid him because they're playing Seattle, and the idea being Seattle is this great defense, historically great defense, but, you know, as you mentioned yesterday, they're just not as good as they've been in the past, and so still very good, but just not elite level dominance, and this is Brady we're talking about, so it does sort of meet in the middle a little bit on him. I could see him having some upside, so, you know, we discussed him there. After him, though, in this game, I mean, I'm really not seeing a ton to get excited about. I guess you have Gronk there. Russell Wilson maybe playing from behind. Patriots have been a pretty good defense this year. What do you think here?
So, yeah, I mean, just to catch people up on the broader perspective on the Brady selection or suggestion, I guess, is that people just tend to overrate. Well, they simultaneously overrate what they perceive to be a bad matchup and underrate just the impact of price. And while it's going from, like, you know, the 9,000 range, which is probably Brady's fair price in a neutral matchup, to 8,300, maybe doesn't sound like that much, but it actually just is a ton. I mean, getting him down in the same price range, like we talked to the debate we had yesterday, was like him or Carson Palmer. Well, Carson Palmer is mostly bad, and him being 400 cheaper than Brady, like, that just doesn't make up the difference. You know, the matchup doesn't change things that dramatically. And what Brady's been doing so far this season are really, I mean, historic is too strong a word, but it's really just Brady business as usual. 12 mm-hmm. touchdowns, no picks, three games with 27 fantasy points or more. And if you can get 27 fantasy points on an $8,300 salary, that's like winning a big tournament level. And I don't think you can pencil him in for that here against Seattle. Seattle is still a good, if not great, defense. But I think it's just worth, you know, therefore looking at him and I guess trusting the Vegas line here too. Vegas sees the Pats as the second highest total on the day and then figuring out where those targets are going to go. So, you know, Gronkowski is obviously a popular selection for that one. I think, you know, Edelman has kind of been up and down, but potentially a high upside guy given that his price is also way below where his fair price would be, assuming health. So, you know, a lot of potential options here. I don't think you're going to want to go there in cash games just because you'll be so dramatically separate from the field for potentially not that huge a payoff. But I'm at least going to do some digs here, and I think this will be part of my big tournament rotation.
And finally, on the Monday night slate, we get the Bengals that go into New York to play the Giants. Game is basically a pick 'em right now. You know, it's funny with these Monday night games and the way they work in the DFS landscape. They're so much less important now. It's so funny, like, because of the way that FanDuel and DraftKings set up their main slate of games, and I think correctly so, to not include the question marks surrounding the Monday night game, it really is, as just for me, just made the Monday night game just not that interesting.
It's less important than the Thursday game, for right. sure. I mean, it's a two-game slate.
And so, give me, you know, if you can sum up this game pretty quickly in terms of just fantasy relevance, is there anywhere to go here?
Well, I mean, again, if you're understanding that you're probably playing a two-game slate with the New England-Seattle game and this game, then, yeah, you're going to have to, you know, put your rubber gloves on and dip your fangs in. But, I mean, on a high level, we have two quarterbacks, not very exciting, that kind of do the same thing. We have two running backs by committee, where the running backs really aren't even that cheap. Two probably overpriced number one wide receivers for this matchup, and Adria Green and Odell Beckham Jr. And then, I don't know, moderately exciting tight end and Tyler Eifert. But again, the 6,100, like, is that, I mean, given that you don't have to play him against the Sunday tight ends, maybe you wind up having to consider him here. But again, just not exciting. I think this one, it's worth diving into if you really are just hell-bent on playing that Sunday into Monday slate. But, you know, we talk about trying to choose slates, like play multiple slates, but really only choosing slates where we feel like there's a big edge to be had. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure, like, looking at these, I haven't, in the interest of total honesty, I haven't really done a deep, deep dive on this game because it just isn't a high priority game. But I don't, this isn't any reason to play the slate, I guess is what I'm saying. you don't rush into this slate just because you're like, man, I'm going to play Larry Donnell and then no one else is going to have him and I'm going to win. Like, Yeah, I'm not pumped here.
Yeah, you took the circuitous route to saying that let's just kind of just ignore it. But yeah, I'm with you. There's really nothing to get excited about here. ODB, I guess, possibly, but that's, I don't know. I'll watch the game because I'm contractually obligated to, but after that, it's just not something I'm going to get too crazy about. All right, that is
don't paraphrase me, by the way. No, that's secure. Don't I can't say that word. Circuitous route me. That was an excellent analysis. And I hope that the listeners actually rewind and listen to it again based on how quality it was.
I do not think that is going to happen. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. And you will also get access to our NBA projections with that as well. It's free for 3 days and $29.95 a month after that. No better deal in the industry. Buddy, enjoy your weekend of football. And we're going to go do a basketball podcast now.
I'll see you then.